This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. It was World Firefly Day over the past weekend, observed annually during the first weekend in July, and basically a global celebration of these fascinating and amazing creatures that inspire wonder in so many of us. And one of those people is Dr. Sarah Lewis. She's a professor of biology at Tufts University over in the US, and she has researched the luminous lives of fireflies for nearly three decades now. And Sarah is also the co-chair of the IUCN Firefly Specialist Group and works on global firefly conservation. And she's joining me now to chat about these most delightful creatures. Welcome, Sarah. Thank you for joining me today.
Julia, thank you so much for having me on your show.
An absolute pleasure. So take me back to the start, Dr. Sarah. You know, I know it was back when you were in graduate school that you first started getting interested in fireflies.
That's true. You know, I was working on a completely different topic, and I happened to be living in a place in the southern U.S. where fireflies are pretty abundant, and you know, I hadn't really noticed them before, but I was sitting on some steps outside looking out over a field, and suddenly, you know, there were all of these silent sparks, and they were all rising up out of the grass all around me, and I was just flabbergasted. You know, it was like my jaw dropped, and it was really, really beautiful. And I started like wondering, you know, what's going on here? You know, what are they flashing about? Which ones of these are males? Which ones are females? And I kind of got hooked then, although it took me, you know, I had to finish up my PhD work. And so it took me several years to come back around to fireflies. And I've been, as you say, working on them now for about three decades. And I feel so fortunate to have, you know, spent actually a lot of my adult life delving into the lives of these luminous creatures. So, yeah, you know, the first thing that really kind of got me hooked on when I started studying fireflies was really trying to decipher their flash communication system and to understand, you know, there's all of the signals going on. What do they really mean? And what's the conversation that's going on between males and female fireflies? And luckily, many fireflies, not all, but many, communicate using very easy to mimic flashes of light. And so you can record their light signals and analyze them in great detail, let us say in kind of gory detail, you know, looking at tiny, tiny differences in the, for example, the duration of the flash really makes a difference. The duration of the male flash really makes a difference to male females, not to the extent that you could see it, you or I could see it, but the female fireflies can detect it. The other thing that's really great about many, not all fireflies, is that, you can play back light signals to them, manipulating them a little bit, changing, you know, this thing or that thing. And female fireflies actually will only respond to male flashes or simulated flashes that they find attractive. If they don't like it, they just will shut up. They don't say anything at all. If they like it, they'll actually, you know, respond by giving a little light flash. And so it's really, really easy to set up a computer system where you can manipulate all different aspects of the male flashes, and you can actually, it's kind of like conducting a firefly opinion poll. You ask the female firefly, okay, do you like this? Do you like that? It's like going to an eye exam. Is this better or is that better? And they respond very nicely. And so it was really, you know, that was cool. And, you know, we found out a lot of really interesting things. We also discovered that during mating, actually, so after courtship, all this flash stuff has gone on, that many firefly males actually transfer, while they're mating, they transfer what's actually called a nuptial gift to the female firefly. And wow. So that was like a really, really surprising thing. We weren't expecting it. We just kind of, it jumped out at us. And that has a lot of implications for the economics of like firefly life histories, because these nuptial gifts are very expensive for males to produce. They're very valuable to females because they're packed with protein that the female uses to provision her eggs. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a big deal from the point of view of fireflies, the nuptial gifts. So anyways, all this time spent really, really deep in the, you know, courtship and sex lives of fireflies. It was it was exciting. We found out a lot. We contributed a lot of scientific knowledge. But meanwhile, my colleagues and I, you know, people who are studying firefly behavior in ecology, started to notice that there were fewer and fewer fireflies, that more and more people in more and more places have been noticing that firefly populations seem to be flickering out. And so that got me interested and my students interested in turning, basically using all of the knowledge that we had accumulated about firefly biology and behavior, using that to try to protect these remarkable creatures.
Mm-hmm. You came up with a pretty big study, if I'm not mistaken, right? It was early last year, together with some colleagues, and I think you identified 11 potential threats in order of importance, right? Am I correct?
Yeah, so we actually conducted a kind of review and a survey of firefly experts from all over the world, including Malaysia. And we asked them to score on a scale from 1 to 5 how important a whole bunch of different potential threats were to fireflies in their region. Mm-hmm. And what we found out is that there was some geographic variation, of course, but that there was a lot of uniformity across the world. The major threat to fireflies, the major perceived threat to fireflies, is the loss of appropriate habitat. Mm. So, for example, in Malaysia, where some fireflies live in mangrove forests along rivers, the loss of that habitat to various kinds of agriculture and development is one of the major threats to one entire group of those, the congregating mangrove fireflies. And that's also happening in the United States. Of course, we don't have mangrove fireflies in the United States, but we have many fireflies that live in wetlands, and wetlands are a habitat that have really, really decreased in the United States. And so those fireflies, their habitat is being lost and degraded. So the loss of appropriate habitat where especially fireflies that are specialists on a particular habitat, like they can't just pick up and move if their habitat is destroyed. So that's the big one. The second biggest threat that we discovered is light pollution. So nights have gotten brighter and brighter, and not just in cities, but that light spills out of cities into the surrounding area. And there's a lot of light from street lamps and car lights and things like that that shine into firefly habitat. And really just in the past decade or so, a lot of evidence has accumulated showing that all of this artificial light, this extra light at night, interferes with the signals, the bioluminescent signals that fireflies use to find their mates. Okay. So that's a big problem for fireflies. If they can't talk to each other, if they can't find mates, they're not going to be able to reproduce. In most places, the third major threat to fireflies was the overuse of pesticides. So in the United States, many people, actually, you know, all over the world, people love fireflies, right? People also love fireflies in the U.S. But they don't actually always know that fireflies are insects. And so they don't really put together the idea that insecticides, you know, broad spectrum insecticides that might kill other insects would also kill fireflies. So one of the things that we're trying to do the firefly specialist group is to basically get information out to people, do kind of public outreach and education about the life cycle of fireflies, when they're vulnerable, what kinds of conditions they need to survive. And so identifying the top threats to fireflies globally was really for us the first step in starting to, well, basically starting our work to protect fireflies against those threats.
Okay. Those were the three main threats. Were there some other big ones that you also wanted to highlight, or you think those are the major ones that we really need to focus on?
I think those are the major ones. You know, in some regions, actually, in Australia, the major threat is climate change and drought. Mm-hmm. And so in Australia, which is fireflies are actually really, really restricted to very, very specific habitats, remnant habitats where it's wet enough for fireflies to complete their entire life cycle. And so drought is increasing drought and wildfires is something that's really, really threatening fireflies in Australia. And also in, you know, parts of the, in the U.S., in desert areas, that's a big concern. Water pollution, both chemical pollutants and, again, runoff, agricultural runoff that includes pesticides and insecticides into bodies of water where in throughout Asia and Southeast Asia, many fireflies have a part of their life cycle where they develop underwater. And so pesticides in the water are a really big concern for some regions.
Okay. All right. I'm speaking today to Dr. Sarah Lewis. She's a noted biologist and firefly expert. She's a professor of biology at Tufts University. She's also the co-chair of the IUCN Firefly Specialist Group. And we're getting to find out more about fireflies because it was World Firefly Day over the past weekend. And we're going to continue that discussion after this quick break. You're listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today is Dr. Sarah Lewis. She's a noted biologist and firefly expert. She's a professor of biology at Tufts University over in the US. She's also the co-chair of the IUCN Firefly Specialist Group. And we're talking about fireflies today, wonderful creatures. You know, over here in Malaysia, we're very special to, very lucky to have the ones who produce simultaneous bioluminescence. Am I correct, Sarah? And you've been over here, haven't you, to see it as well?
Yeah, you know, in Malaysia, you are very lucky because it's like the thing that everybody wants to come and see, which are the synchronous fireflies where the males gather in riverside display trees, some often mangroves, and they gather by the thousands and they all flash in unison. That's a really, really famous sight, and everybody around the world, you know, knows about it and wants to come and see those fireflies. So yeah, you are very lucky. And that's a mating display. It's a courtship display where the males are basically looking for gathering in visually prominent trees where they've got a really good view all around, 360-degree view of the tree, and the females are actually flying into the display trees. They're choosing where to go and what group of males they're attracted to by how easy it is to see that sort of, it's like a beacon in the night. So yeah, all of that flashy bioluminescence for those fireflies and for all of the fireflies, actually, well, it really has two purposes. One purpose is courtship, and we've talked about how the males are signaling to females who are responding or flying in to choose a male. Mm-hmm. And the other is that it's a warning. So we know that firefly light first evolved not as a courtship signal, but it first evolved as a warning signal. Mm-hmm. So it's fireflies have they taste bad. So they taste bad because they have toxins inside their bodies that they've accumulated. And so that bioluminescence originally evolved as a warning signal to ward off potential predators. Really easy to learn this signal. It's a bright light. Yeah, I'm going to remember that next time after I get a mouthful of this really, really nasty tasting bug. So fireflies' light producing talent first evolved as a warning and then later got co-opted to be used as a courtship signal by some fireflies.
Okay. All right. And, you know, you spoke about it so beautifully in your TED Talk from 2014. And that was, of course, called The Loves and the Lies of Firefly. I really highly recommend everyone goes and has a look. There's even stories about firefly vampires brought to you by natural selection. But, you know, as you said, it's not so good the news, right? That the lights are diminishing. I think even for me, you know, just going to the mangroves 10 years apart, I saw a, you know, severe decline in the numbers, you know, just and I have no professional sort of qualification. It's just based on that. And I'm sure you're seeing the same thing as well in your work.
Yeah, you know, there are some places where fireflies are doing fine and some species of fireflies that are doing fine. And, you know, like all insects, fireflies have good years and bad years. But there are certain fireflies, especially the ones that are, you know, live in very specific habitats. They need like those conditions in order to successfully complete their life cycle. If those conditions aren't met, they're not going to thrive. Mm-hmm. And so the Forestry Research Institute of Malaysia actually is one of the world leaders in monitoring firefly populations, actually. For many, many years, they've been monitoring sites along some of the mangrove rivers and year after year monitoring the same sites and noticing exactly what you've just mentioned, which is a decline in firefly populations. So that's kind of a concern because, again, you know, once those populations are lost, they're gone. They're probably not going to be able to recolonize from adjacent areas.
Okay, that's really quite troubling. And as I mentioned, you're also the co-chair of the IUCN Firefly Specialist Group, right? And what are some of the things that you are working on through this group? What is the ultimate goal of the group?
Mm-hmm. So the ultimate goal of the group is to figure out what's going on with fireflies and to identify, you know, there's more than 2,000 species of fireflies worldwide. And so what we're trying to do is to identify the particular firefly species that are most at risk of extinction. Mm-hmm. And then to, and what the threats are. So we've identified the threats. We're now going through basically region by region and compiling all the existing information that we have on firefly abundance and their distributions and their behavior and their ecology, their habitat requirements. And we are carefully sifting through that information to figure out, are these populations, is this particular firefly species doing fine? Is its habitat, you know, widespread? It's a habitat generalist, no problem. Or is it a species that's on the decline? And then once we identify the most threatened firefly species, we're working with partners in different regions and governments, agencies in different regions, to try to come up with a plan to protect those firefly species. Because, you know, who wants to live in a world without fireflies?
Yeah. For sure. And I do know that you also have a book called Silent Sparks, The Wondrous World of Fireflies. How can we get our hands on a copy? And, you know, what was the book about, really?
Yeah, so that was really fun to write. I had a chance to write that. I had a sabbatical from Tufts University, which is in Boston, a few years back. And I decided that, you know, I get asked a lot of questions when I tell people, you know, what do you work on? Oh, I'm a firefly biologist. People want to know.
Yeah.
People are so curious about fireflies. And everybody loves fireflies. And I feel like scientists generally do a pretty poor job of explaining what it is we know and describing the latest scientific discoveries about fireflies. And there's so many exciting stories and discoveries that we've made just in the past, you know, couple of decades. And so I decided that I would try to tell some of those stories. And so I wrote Silent Sparks, The Wondrous World of Fireflies, which is available, I guess, on Amazon, mm-hmm. or from your local bookstore. might have a copy of it, or your local library might have a copy of it, or the Malaysian Nature Society might have a copy of it. And so it is really, you know, if you love fireflies, I wrote that book for you because I really tried to cut through all the scientific jargon and just describe some of the wonder and some of the magic of fireflies and some of the science behind the spectacle. And so it's full of travel stories, stories about firefly scientists all over the world, stories about Malaysia and your amazing fireflies there. Yeah, it was really fun to write. I got to actually use like punctuation, exclamation points, not something that is typical in scientific writing. So, yeah, I would highly recommend that anybody who's interested in learning more about fireflies and it's about fireflies all over the world, maybe try to pick up a copy of that.
Okay, definitely. And as I mentioned, you know, it was World Firefly Day over the weekend. But I mean, why must we stop the celebration? And the theme, of course, was Watch Us, Don't Catch Us, right? Why was that theme in particular chosen?
Yeah, so each year we get to choose a different theme. And this year we decide to focus on firefly tourism, which, as you know, is really has a lot of benefits. Going to see fireflies in the wild, you know, going out into the night and seeing fireflies, you know, some people might kind of take it for granted. But if you live in a city or if you haven't ever had an opportunity to see fireflies, it's like a gateway to the miraculous. It's a really, really awe-inspiring. It's one of the wonders of the natural world. And so, you know, it has a lot of psychological benefits for people and social benefits. You know, if you're in a group and you're going to see fireflies, it's like, you know, oh, this is so great all together. And in addition, it also, firefly tourism has a lot of economic benefits. As you know, in many parts of the world, firefly tourism is a really big deal. It brings benefits to local communities. It brings benefits to states and revenue to countries. And so more and more people are actually going out into the night to watch fireflies. We recently, this year, we did a compilation, a review of global firefly tourism. And we were surprised to discover that if you add up all the countries and all the sites around the world, more than a million before the pandemic, more than a million people every year were going out to sites in more than 12 countries to see fireflies. That's an astounding number of people. So it's a really big and maybe previously underappreciated component of nature tourism. It's a big deal. And many different species of fireflies. And so that's really great, right? That's a fantastic thing. On the other hand, it comes with some downside. And so if it's not carefully managed, firefly tourism has the potential to harm firefly populations. And it can do that in a number of ways. One of the ways we've already talked about here, which is introducing unnecessary, unwanted, and detrimental light pollution. Right. A lot of artificial light from infrastructure, from you know, boat traffic or flashlights, even camera flashes turn out to disrupt the flash behavior of some of the mangrove fireflies. So that needs to be carefully managed. The other, when there's a lot of people that are coming into a small area to look at fireflies, there are other impacts that are adverse impacts on the firefly populations. In places like Thailand and Malaysia, where firefly tourism is quite popular and it is centered, although not exclusively, but it's centered on the riverside mangrove fireflies, yep. The tourists are mostly going out in boats and to see the fireflies. And in some parts of Thailand, they, in the past, they have gone out in high-speed motorboats.
Oh, no.
And the motorboat traffic, not carefully regulated, can cause erosion of the riverbank and can disturb the habitat where the juvenile fireflies, the baby fireflies, develop in the mud around the base of the mangrove trees. And they can get washed into the river by so much erosion from the, just basically from the waves, from the wakes of the boats. So that's a problem. And what we wanted to do with World Firefly Day this year was centered on Watch Us, Don't Catch Us, as a way to draw attention to the benefit of firefly tourism and also the potential downsides of firefly tourism. And when in our review of global firefly tourism, we also came up with some guidelines that we hope would be sort of an optional, you know, suggestions for how the managers, the people who are responsible for running various tourist sites in different parts of the world, the kinds of things they might consider in order to protect firefly populations. So it fits in the theme, Watch Us, Don't Catch Us, fits in very well with our focus, recent focus on firefly tourism.
Okay. All right. And I'm sure, you know, your work is going to continue, of course. I guess, you know, just before we let you go, any last message that you'd like to leave us with in conjunction with World Firefly Day? Like we were saying, you know, how can we keep the lights, you know, still shining bright?
Yeah. You know, I just wanted to say you correctly mentioned that I actually have had the opportunity to visit Malaysia in July 2019. I was in KL and I had a chance to go to Bukit Kiara and to see the giant glowworm fireflies there.
Yeah, wow.
And I, you know, we've been talking about the mangrove fireflies, but there's a lot of different kinds of fireflies. And I was so impressed. That's actually a species of firefly I've been wanting to see for a really long time. And it was really impressive. They're so big. They're very macroscopic. They're, you know, as big as your thumb. And the juveniles are really big and the females are flightless and also really big. And it was fantastic to see that protected area right in the middle of the city, basically, with a very, very healthy firefly population that people are working so hard to protect and, you know, making it available for anyone to go out and to see the fireflies there. So I was really, really impressed with that. And yeah, I loved visiting Malaysia.
Well, hopefully we will get to see you soon again and have a chat in the studio. But thank you so much for joining me today, Sarah. I've been speaking to Dr. Sarah Lewis. She is a professor of biology at Tufts University over in Boston in the US. And she's the co-chair of the IUCN Firefly Specialist Group. And we were talking about why fireflies are so amazing. And remember, watch them, don't catch them. And if you'd like to find out more about the work that she's doing, just head to fireflyinternational.net/IUCN. And if you miss any part of today's interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, just download the podcast at the BFM app or at bfm.my. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.